Hi, and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 42. We are here with Dave Jilk, the CEO of Standing Cloud. Hi, Dave.
Hi,
Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you. And I am Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show. We'll jump right into the industry news. A few stories that have happened over the last few weeks. In the big data world, Cloudera raised $25 million, which is no small change. Seems to be headed straight towards the enterprise. And my guess is they're going to spend a lot of that money on sales and marketing to really, become the take a leadership position there in the enterprise. Any thoughts on that fundraising, Dave?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's very expensive to sell into the enterprise, and they have a product that needs some education.
Yeah.
And so they will need that funding. You start to wonder about the kind of returns that you can get from that size investment.
That's a big investment. I mean, they do some software development, but not.
Yeah, well, it isn't about what they develop. It's about what the value is that they provide. And,
right.
And, if they can provide even a little bit of leverage to some big companies, then there could be a lot of value provided there. But again, a lot of the Hadoop and other big data solutions may or may not be appropriate for the kinds of things they're doing in the enterprise. So,
right.
There is really a big question as to how big that market is, but that's what the bet is.
It's a big bet. The news in Amazon, they did a price reduction on S3 up to 19%. So, in my opinion, they're betting now on just the land grab and sort of riding the margin curve down. From wherever they were, we've had a lot of discussions, and James Waters, who is on our roundtable, always talks about, Amazon really does have a high margin business, and this certainly is an indication of that. Further to their high margin business, they're giving away free use of EC2 and some basic S3 and Elastic Block Store stuff for a year. You do a lot of work with Standing Cloud with all these providers, but just from an industry perspective, what's your take on these Amazon moves, Dave?
Yeah, I think obviously they're trying to promote what they're doing and create even more noise around it, and that's good. I'm not exactly sure who the free offering is targeted at, because if you're a startup company, you're almost certainly already using Amazon. If you're a small business, and if you look at their free offering, there's a mishmash of things that you can buy that you're not even familiar with. And for the enterprise, the free offering doesn't really make any difference.
Well, I think it's a lead generation kind of thing. They really want to make it totally frictionless for somebody to get started. So
yeah.
Now it seems like you don't even need a credit card to get started. I don't know. I haven't gone through the process. So I think maybe you're going to see it more for people who have an idea at a company but don't have the approval to go do it, or college students who we all know have no money, or could be anything
sure,
in that range.
Sure, and the IT end run is one of the use cases for the cloud.
The IT end run.
Having it be free makes it easier to do that.
I like that term.
Putting it in a different way, business innovators within organizations, technical innovators can now use it. But I don't really think that's been an obstacle anyway. I mean, putting a few tens of dollars on your
yeah.
credit card if you really want to do something hasn't really been an obstacle.
Yeah, maybe it's more noise making.
I think it's good.
Another thing with the big cloud provider, Microsoft and Azure, they announced that they're going to be spending a lot of time and energy on Java. And I'm a big fan of what's happening with sort of this resurgence of Java across VMware with their Java initiatives. Microsoft, of course, just made this announcement. Oracle's been making noise about it. Google added Java. What's your take on Java as a sort of lingua franca for cloud applications?
Well, we use Java, so obviously I'm biased, but Java is not one of the popular upcoming new languages these days.
It's not necessarily the cool kid on the block, but it's the moneymaker, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I sort of wonder though about Microsoft doing this, because have they saturated the market for .NET C# development already? Are they done there and they need to move out into Java? I mean,
even when they announced Azure, they talked about doing PHP and Ruby on Rails. And so I think they've taken, at least in the Azure group, we're not going to be beholden to any one programming framework or language, and we're going to let the market tell us what to do. I think that's what's going on, but I don't have any inside info.
Yeah, I'm confused by it. I think a lot of people are confused by their Azure strategy. When they very first announced Azure, it was a platform as a service for .NET and C#, which could be, you could deploy your apps to the cloud. If you have a Microsoft Amazon-centric application. It would go right up there and work seamlessly.
Right.
That, to me, seemed like a tremendous...
That made a lot of sense.
That made sense, and I understood it completely. And since then, it's gotten complicated. I understand their desire to not to open it up to people who are not... Microsoft-centric developers, but that's a big crowd. It's a big market.
And yeah, yeah.
Figure it out with your customers, and then maybe go to some people who aren't currently in the fold.
Many shows ago, we had Grant Leathers from Kelly Blue Book on, and they are one of the early Microsoft Azure customers. They were one of the alpha customers, and he talked about the seamlessness by which they were able to take their .NET shop. So for them, it was a no-brainer. They watched what was going on with Amazon, but waited patiently because they knew once Microsoft had that, like you said, seamless gateway, so to speak, for the .NET stuff, it was really an easy decision for them.
Well, the downside to a platform as a service is lock-in, but if you're using Microsoft technology, you're committed already.
So, I think there's plenty of businesses in corporate America and around the world that are very happy to let Microsoft handle it.
Yes.
Another announcement, the Intel Open Data Center Alliance. Now, every time I read this, I say, because I'm a little cynical of this alliance stuff. I did a lot of alliance work earlier in my career. I sort of think, like, you start doing alliances when you don't have customers to work with. And it seems like that's, Intel's saying, we better get on this cloud bandwagon. And since we don't have a huge deployment of cloud customers, I mean, they do, obviously, everybody uses Intel chips in one place or another. Did you see this alliance announcement? What did you make of it?
I did. And we can't downplay Intel too much. Remember
sure.
that the FX bid is what it's enabling all of this cloud stuff, right?
Right.
So,
right.
And of course, they're a major driver in the industry. That said, cloud standards alliances seem to be as common as Middle East peace initiatives. there are so many standards bodies that I don't, maybe there needs to be a meta standards body. But some of the things they're emphasizing, the federation, the three tenets are federation, automation, and client awareness. Obviously, these are good things. They're seven layers on above Intel on the stack. The fact that they're pushing them is good, and getting. I think they're taught that the alliance is primarily customer types, not
right.
Industry people.
You're right.
And I think getting the customer types to be talking about the issues will help drive not necessarily standardization, but some thoughtfulness on the part of the industry. So
yeah, I think you're right.
It won't be bad. It just it's not gonna end up in the place everybody would like, which is that one standard to rule them all.
Yeah, I think that opportunity has long passed. Dell made a small acquisition this morning, a company called Boomi that's focused on data transfer between cloud apps. They talked, I read quickly, I think I've got it right, but things like going between NetSuite and Salesforce, and I think maybe Zuora was in there too as an option. So it was a very small acquisition. They seemed to get a lot of activity on the Twitter feeds and the news feeds this morning about it. Good strategy for them. But I do think this is going to be a problem over time about people wanting to move data between applications, and I hope that maybe we can talk a little bit about that when we get
sure.
into the guest Q&A. So let's jump into that now. Again, we're here with Dave Jilk, the CEO of Standing Cloud. And before we get into the company, tell us a little bit about your background, Dave.
Sure. Well, one of my our primary investor at Standing Cloud is founder group Brad Feld is the partner on the deal, and Brad and I go way back. And in fact, my first company was I was partners with Brad in it was called Feld Technologies, and we did custom application development using a fourth generation language called Clarion, and we did Novell network integration, and this was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was pre-Windows, and eventually we migrated onto Microsoft Access as our development platform. And I mention that in part because it leads into the history or the evolution of what Standing Cloud is. So, but we were quintessential small VAR. We had 20 people and in downtown Boston.
Probably representative of your customer today, perhaps, but we'll get into that over time. So talk a little bit about the company.
Standing Cloud is aiming to make it easier to deploy and manage applications using cloud services. And if you've poked around with Amazon or any of the others, you know that it's not trivial to get started. And where we're bringing that is essentially we say that we're reimagining hosting. And if you look at the shared hosting market, which used to be called ASPs, That really hasn't changed a lot since the late 90s, early 2000s. And the cloud and virtualization make it possible to do things in a very different way that bring benefits to users. So essentially what we're doing is we're re-engineering the way that hosting is done so that the users can get more benefits and do something a little more powerful than they used to.
So what does that mean in terms of the products and services? What am I getting from standing cloud?
Well, just as one example, for our products, essentially our service is you log in and you can deploy applications with one click, but you can also manage them without paying a lot.
An example of a couple of applications?
Oh, sure. So Drupal, Sugar CRM. Right now, all the applications are open source. We have about 65 different open source applications, plus about 5 or 6 raw stacks.
So instead of me spinning up a server on EC2 and getting my Elastic Block Store configured and then finding how to get this software installed and everything, I can come to Standing Cloud and sign up and essentially have a one-button click deployment for a Drupal installation, or
that's right. So, and we have two modes. One is a test drive, where if you are registered for a service and with OpenID, it takes only a few seconds. You could actually have a Drupal instance up and running on a cloud server in about 30 seconds, because we actually maintain a block of servers running with the stack pre-installed. So all we have to do is install the app itself. We do that all automatically. You just pick your app and you go. And so the test drive is particularly quick and easy. And then for hosting, it's the same process. It just takes a little longer because we start a fresh server. And so you don't have to know anything. You don't have to know about system configuration. You don't have to know about the application. You don't even need to actually fill in your own details on the application if you don't want to. You can do that later. So we actually go through the series of configuration screens for the application for you so that you don't even have to think about that. You can just be up and running right away and start working with the app.
Interesting. So I was on your website last night. There's something like, and you mentioned 65-something applications across. Tell us a little bit about the categories of applications, and that's a lot of stuff. What are the most popular besides Drupal as one example?
Sure. So one of the major categories is, of course, content management systems, which really is just the modern way to do websites, right? No, not very many people actually produce raw HTML for their website anymore. They're embedded within a content management system. WordPress is obviously the most popular, and Drupal the most popular for more complex websites. And Plone is another one, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Then we have CRM systems, so vTiger and Sugar CRM and some others. We have a few software developer tools like Hudson and Mantis, which is a bug tracking system. Really, there are about a dozen categories depending on how you categorize them, right? So business,
right,
productivity, software development, various things. Essentially what we're trying to, and we're not really limited to that set. We're continuing to add new applications all the time. And ultimately we will get into commercial applications. There's nothing at all preventing us from doing commercial applications other than the owners of that software and intellectual property need to make a deal with us before we can do that.
Right. That'd be a different pricing model.
It'll be a similar pricing model, just a higher price, right? You'll need to pay for the software too.
What is the pricing model?
So the pricing model is per application per month. So it's intended to be a lot like software as a service from the user's perspective. For example, if you want to stand up a single Plone instance today or a WordPress instance, you pay $24.95 a month for a server. What we're doing, though, and we might want to get into this a little more later, is we're aiming it at solution providers, people who are kind of consultants who work with these applications. And there are each open source application has a community of people who are expert in it, and they customize it, they install it, they set it up for their customers. Right now, end users are confused about what the cloud is, and so what we found is that marketing to end users, when I say end users, I mean small and medium-sized businesses,
they're going to might glaze over.
There was a study that came out late this summer that showed that among small to medium business owners, 72% thought that they knew the same or less than they did a year before about what the cloud is. So in other words, let's not target them. Let's target the people who service those customers and who understand the benefits that can be gained from hosting on a cloud server instead of on a shared hosting model. Just for example, if you're a solution provider and you work with, let's just say, Sugar CRM, you customize it, you know, deploy it on behalf of clients, and you host that on various standardized hosting platforms, you have experienced downtime over the last year.
So you're saying if I'm again this medium sized reseller, maybe I'm hosting on GoDaddy, maybe I'm hosting on One-to-One,
Skater, Vario.
You're saying those type of solutions. I could be doing hosting on Amazon, but as a service provider, I'd be managing EC2 and so forth as well.
Yeah, these service providers are accustomed to using shared hosting platforms. I mean, that's the standard model for doing this, and it's inexpensive. I mean, it's a good price,
right?
And for some of the very smallest businesses, it's nice to have that email package and the other things that come with it. But if you want to do anything significantly more complicated, you don't get, you know, it's a shared hosting environment. You don't get root access. You don't get full control over what's going on there. And
Because you get the hosting providers. Well, no, you're installing the application yourself, right? Or using their instantiation of it.
Right. So you install their version of it, whatever that is. If you want to change versions, you can do that. It's extremely unwieldy to do that on a shared hosting platform. They just don't. You don't have access to the normal set of tools that you'd like to use. You know, you have FTP, but files like that is just not very
right. And so by offering the applications through Standing Cloud, the reseller gets a much more granular ability to work with the applications. Is that
exactly
what you're saying?
They get the ability to work with the application like they would normally do if they were running it themselves. So, but also we've built tools on top of it that do some of the things they would normally have to do themselves. So, for example, I mean the biggest example is backups. It's one of the classic things that you need to have. And with a shared hosting model, you don't have the backup. Well, you can do it, I suppose.
Right.
But you don't really
you
have
see
the backup.
You have to set it up manually.
They back up.
Right.
And if they're down, essentially you're helpless. You have to wait until they come back up again. What we do instead is we retain those backups and can move it to another server pretty much instantly. And if that cloud is completely down, we can actually move it to a different cloud service seamlessly. And so the idea is, and we're not there yet, but at some point soon, we hope to be able to offer SLAs, because in essence, we are a meta cloud, right? We are able to support a number of them, a number of cloud services, and the applications are fully portable among them, the way we deploy them.
Hmm. What criteria do you use to pick the applications? I mean, now you mentioned you've got all open source applications. That was obviously an easy criteria for the licensing
transaction
model.
Transaction overhead.
Yeah.
Yes.
But are there other criteria you use to pick applications?
Our most important criterion is when people ask us for an application. So we have a forum, you know, user voice feedback on our site, and we get input from users who request applications, and usually that's our top priority.
Right.
We also have marketing priorities, and is it interesting? Does it add another category? Does it add depth to one of the categories we already have? There are a number of criteria, but we add a couple of them a week. We do have plans, not surprisingly, to make it possible for other people to add applications to our service.
It's like a marketplace kind of a
exactly
thing.
And that's not in there today, but we're planning that.
Neat. I noticed going through the list of applications that while there's lots of mention of MySQL, I can't do deploy MySQL. I could deploy Drizzle. Well, what's the strategy there, and why is that there, not there?
Sure. It actually goes the other way. So Drizzle is explicitly there because it's a new thing and people wanted to try it. And we've done some work with Rackspace, and I don't know if you know, they own the development team for Drizzle, or they pay the development team for Drizzle, and so we're sort of promoting Drizzle as something people should look at, and we make it really easy to look at Drizzle, right? We've got a WordPress on Drizzle application, so you can see how WordPress was changed, which is minimally, to work with Drizzle. All the other applications, pretty much, unless they don't really use a relational database, are using MySQL. So MySQL is kind of embedded in a lot of what we do.
But you're not exposing that because you really focus on the application layer.
That's right. We do have application stacks. So LAMP is one of the application stacks that you can deploy. You can do a test drive of a LAMP stack in, again, 30 seconds or so. And that, of course, is running Apache MySQL and PHP. So in that sense, we expose it directly.
Gotcha. I noticed on the website you were promoting our outreach around OpenVBX, which is the open source PBX software from Twilio. Jeff Lawson from Twilio was on the show, so I'm very familiar with what they're doing. What's the relationship or what's the intent of that OpenVBX picture that was on the homepage?
Sure. Well, that's a nascent partnership. You know, I've spoken with Jeff and we're working with them. They really like what we're doing because first, with a test drive, you can get OpenVBX and Twilio running in minutes. You can be doing, you know, set up your simple PBX using OpenVBX. And so that's really cool because it's one of, they're very much an API service company, and so they don't have, it's not as easy for them to expose and test drive what they're doing. But also very important to Twilio users is that the server that is running OpenVBX or any application that connects to Twilio must be up all the time or your phone system is down.
Right.
It's as though in the prehistoric days when we had phone systems in our offices, if someone had unplugged the phone system, your phones are down.
Right.
So if your server that's running OpenVBX is down, the same thing. So the fact that we can ensure that they stay up because we detect downtime and move it to another server immediately is very valuable. You could simply couldn't do that on a shared hosting platform. It's not reliable enough.
Gotcha. Tell us about the stereotypical customer. We talked a little bit about, you know, initially going out to end users, now focusing on the resellers. But what does the end user look like that the reseller is reaching with your service?
Sure. We find that end users who are cloud aware and solution providers or resellers end up looking very similar in terms of their characteristics, because they're familiar with the types of problems that you might have with a shared hosting environment. The typical customer for standing cloud, not surprisingly, has recently experienced pain in one of these environments. A good example is a news blog that is using standing cloud, who had been using HostGator, which is one of the well-known shared hosting providers, and they kept shutting his site down right when it got busy, because that's what they do in a shared hosting environment. If you're taking too many resources, they shut your site down. Well, that's exactly when you want your site not to be down if you're getting lots of hits, right?
Right.
Now, the option at a typical shared hosting provider today is you can move up to one of their VPS servers for $100 a month instead of your $4.95 a month account. So one of the things that the cloud, we talked earlier about hosting reimagined and how you can bring benefits to users that are new versus the traditional model.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is being able to scale up more incrementally. So in a cloud environment, you can just scale up to a slightly larger server and probably handle dramatically more volume to the point where, say, on Rackspace, you can go from WordPress or Drupal runs on a 256 meg server, which is only a penny and a half an hour or $11 a month for that server. But you can go all the way to a 16 gig server that essentially looks the same. It just has more RAM and more CPU capacity.
So right, and can handle more connections.
Handle much more connections. And so that first cut at scaling, not like RightScale and Kavo and some of the more sophisticated systems for the enterprise where
you're scaling across multiple machines
in a tier.
You're saying that's different.
Tiers. That's a different kind of scaling. It's still scaling. It's giving you more capacity, but it's a much more complex endeavor. Here, an end user or a small to medium-sized business typically will get a lot of horsepower just out of making the server bigger.
Gotcha. So is that where the scaling focus for standing cloud at this time is just getting people, you know, up to a beefier server as need be, which is going to cover 99% of the market?
It is. And we don't have that in today's version, but that's coming in a sprint or two and maybe in two to four weeks. One of the things to note is that some of the cloud providers actually have a way to resize servers directly. They don't all, and it's not consistent the way they do it. And so, again, one of the things that we're trying to do is make all this stuff consistent. We're not trying to produce standards, but we're trying to make it so that things can move around for the users. And that's really kind of what the users want, is to be able to be not stuck and to have some control over what's going on if they need it.
Neat. I want to take a little side note. We tend to be a little Silicon Valley, Bay Area-centric on the Cloud Computing Show, mostly because that's where I live. But you're from Boulder. There's a very vibrant tech community in Boulder. Tell us a little bit about what the tech community is like out there and give people a sense of it.
Sure. It's interesting. It has really changed over the last 4 or 5 years. It was a very strong tech community before, but it was extremely low-key. And with the advent of Techstars, I think has created a lot of the a lot of the noise surrounding it.
For people who might not know, can you just tell us?
Sure. Techstars is, well, for the Bay Area focused people, it's like Y Combinator, except it's, you know, there are significant differences, obviously.
Right. So an incubator program for small startups to really prosper.
Yeah, you know, incubator has some connotations from the internet bubble era.
Sure.
That it's certainly not all about physical facility. It's not, the companies do not stay in Techstars indefinitely. It's a 3-month program, and it's not, incubators are about services and physical facilities and things. Techstars is really about mentors,
mm-hmm.
and it's about the people involved and getting the companies talking to people who actually know how to run startups and how to build them. And so Techstars brings together the entrepreneurs who seem to have a lot of potential, as assessed by David Cohen, and with a whole set of mentors. And, of course, they're in 4 cities now, so they're in Seattle, Boulder, New York, and Boston. But really, for Boulder, to get back to the original question, I mean, Techstars has really created a lot of that visibility.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many different centers of activity. I mean, the university has the Silicon Flatirons program. You know, several hundred people show up every month to the New Tech meetup there, and it's a crazy scene. It's really kind of almost, if they had more alcohol, it would be a very wild party. the coffee shops are just jammed with people writing code, and, you know, I don't know what all they're doing, but they're it's a very vibrant sort of situation. And there are a lot of funded companies there. And many of them are not funded by local VCs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
Foundry Group is a local firm, correct? Are they based in?
They are. They're headquartered
Boulder or Denver?
In Boulder.
Mm-hmm. And what's it like to work with them?
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned you go way back.
Well, I go way back, and I've worked with all of the partners at Foundry for a while. So I worked for SoftBank Venture Capital, which became Mobius back in 2000.
Gotcha.
And I worked with Ryan and Jason remotely. They were in California office, and with Seth Levine. In fact, I interviewed Seth when he started at Mobius. So I go way back with all of them. They're terrific folks. I think, you know, the couple of interesting things that I'd say about working with those guys is that, first of all, they're extremely thoughtful about how they do things. They don't overemphasize patterns of how to invest and how to do things. They look at the situation and think about how it can be handled in this case, and not try to directly apply lessons learned elsewhere. They synthesize the lessons and try to apply them to your situation, which
neat.
I think is pretty valuable. A lot of VCs I've known and talked to, they have a tendency to kind of say, "Oh, that looks just like that," so that's
pattern matching.
Well, it's not pattern matching. It's actually direct matching. I do a lot of stuff with neural networks in my past, and pattern matching is actually kind of, you know, filling in the synthesis of everything. Whereas what they're doing is they're one-on-one matching. They're saying, "Oh, you're a lot like this company. You should do what they did."
Which right,
may or may not be appropriate. The other thing is that these guys have all run businesses. They've been in businesses. Ryan co-founded Excite. Brad ran Interliant and worked with me at Fault Technologies and other businesses. And Seth has an entrepreneurial background. I mean, these guys know what it's like to be in a business. They know the day-to-day pain of a startup, not just the day-to-day pain of the venture firm.
Right.
And so that helps a lot. That makes a big difference.
Great. Jumping back to the technology a little bit, I really want to understand, you know, what pieces of the infrastructure, and make it clear to the audience, what pieces you own, sort of the cloud providers that you work with, how that works. If I sign up for your service, am I paying you for everything? Do I get a bill directly from the cloud providers? Can I choose any cloud provider? Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Sure. So first of all, I like to show people our data center. We have a little closet in our office, and it just has a router,
okay,
a cable modem or whatever it is, connecting us to the internet. And there are no servers. There's some empty boxes. We own no infrastructure. We work entirely with the cloud providers. Our system runs on a combination of cloud providers. In fact, it'll run on any of them because we use our own technology stack. We can't quite yet deploy our system with our system, but the technology stacks and such are the same. And so we are completely at some level agnostic to the cloud provider that we're using, in the sense that we make it possible to deploy and manage applications on those cloud providers. Right. On the other hand, what we found, we had an offering for a while where you could put your own API credentials in and use our system to manage your apps that way. And what we found is that that's not really what people want. I mean, what people want is applications, and just don't tell me about servers, don't tell me about EBS, don't tell me about any of these things.
Yeah, it's a lot more than most people need
to run my application. And so, if you're a startup, you want all that stuff. If you're a business that is not in the technology business, you don't want any of it. You just want the thing to work. And so we price it so that and offer it so that it's just per application. You pay it, right? You pay us per application. You have no bill from the cloud provider.
Just from you.
One-stop shop. You don't pay for bandwidth fees. We've kind of baked that into the pricing so that, you know, a reasonable amount of bandwidth. And, you know, we have a cap on it, so you can buy more.
Right.
But I hate to liken it to cell phones, but the tiered pricing model is what people like, because they just want to know how much the bill is going to be.
Right.
And so, if you're really into the metering and stuff, you're probably a more sophisticated user and you want some things that we don't provide anyway.
Neat. So one of my big things that I'm a real fan of is businesses where there's information about what customers are doing that can perhaps benefit that customer set as well. So in the case that I envision with Standing Cloud, the information that you guys have about which applications customers are using and at which combination might also be helpful to other customers to help pick and choose and find. Is there anything in the business plan or anything that you think about from that perspective?
There is. I don't know that we're going to use data and mine it in any kind of, you know, public sort of way, but I think the objective we have in terms of usage data and information, we want to collect that to make the service better, obviously, right? So one example that fits right into what you're talking about is what applications do people use in what combinations. There are a few services right now that package up some open source apps as here's your CRM, here's your website, here's your your HRM package. And the thing is, why do I have to use that combination of four applications? Why can't I use this combination?
Right, you might always want one or the other. I mean, I tend to prefer to at least know which has the largest ecosystem so I can understand what the benefits might be, and then I might want to choose something else, but at least that's conscious.
That's right. But what we do plan, and have nothing of today, but what we do plan is an environment where you can go in and build your solution, in essence. Your solution being, you know, you have a set of business problems that you want to use information technology to solve. You'd like to deploy it quickly and easily. You'd like it to be inexpensive. You'd like to get the recommendations of other users. You'd like to, you know, it's kind of like an app store, right?
Except right.
that we bring together a number of things that a single purpose app store doesn't, because, you know, you have things like, many of these applications have things like plugins. So they are, there are several thousand WordPress plugins and several hundred for Drupal and Sugar CRM has them. And
right.
most of the more popular applications have, there's a whole marketplace needed for those. And it's very difficult to find information about them. And so, just as an example, we'll be looking at ways to make it easier for users to pick from those. And again, centralizing it so you don't have to go over to Drupal for this and over to somebody. The other thing is finding a typical business beyond the tiniest businesses need a solution provider to do some of the work for them. And being able to find those solution providers that have expertise in those applications is another piece of that environment that we're thinking about creating. But this is all, again, I like to be, maybe this is also because I'm not in the Bay Area, but I like to keep it straight between what we have today and what we have in the future. What we've just been talking about is all future ideas.
It's great for you to be so transparent, but it's also nice to understand where the potential is. I think it's very exciting. You had an announcement today that I understand about some new interface work and some solution provider packages. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, one of the things is that we've updated our website for the first time in maybe 15 months, and from our very original website, and it's a lot nicer and definitely makes it easier to navigate and see what we're doing. But importantly, the announcement is along the lines of what we've been talking about. We actually are providing a package for solution providers that is priced the way we talked about, where for one application it's $24.95 a month, but for four it is $34.95 a month. And
Bull.
the reason we can do that is that they can share a server. So many of these solution providers have small clients who need to share a server, and so they have access to the virtual machine. Again, the solution provider has root access, the client doesn't. So they can configure things the way they need to if they need to do anything special. But they're getting the pricing advantage, the cost advantage of sharing a server.
Yeah, that's a huge value for somebody who needs, you know, three or four things all bundled into one.
It is. And, we're going to be, we're using a customer development methodology. I don't know if you're familiar with Lean Startup and such. And
sure.
We're definitely still experimenting with exactly how to structure and price this. We came up with this idea of a four-pack because we're in Colorado and you get four-pack ski days. that seemed like about the number that you'd want to put on the very smallest server. But we'll be doing other things in the future with packaging in terms of, how many users you can get, because it might make sense to if you have 100 customers and you're a solution provider, it might make sense for you to just have one 16 gig server that has all of them on it. And
right.
And then, because of the way our system is structured, again, this portability aspect is so important, and you don't realize it until you see what kinds of things you can do with it. They could all be on a shared server until one of them gets busy, and we can move that one implementation to its own server so that it can handle that traffic.
Right, that abstraction really comes into play.
And this is not something that takes a day or two to do. It takes seconds. Mm-hmm. Just move it. So that can be very powerful.
Neat. That sounds great. Let's jump into the next couple sections of the show. Trade shows this week, I believe, is Cloud Expo. Are you going to Cloud Expo?
I was there yesterday.
Okay, well, tell us about it.
I'm going back again today. They seem to have a great selection of speakers. There are a lot of IT executives there, and middle managers as well. So the enterprise. This is an enterprise focused show. It's really not. It's not a show for customers of ours. It's I'm mainly talking to partner type mm-hmm. people. There's a lot of cloud providers, etc. It seems like a good show. I have to say, it has some sense of disorganization. There's some things that were not as organized as I would have liked, but the substance of the show and the conference seems to be very solid. A lot of the usual suspects are there.
Great. Let's jump into Cloud Tips, where we give some recommendations of services, products, companies that might be helpful to the audience. Dave, I'll let you go first.
Sure. Well, at the risk of being banal, I'm going to say that I've been using, about a month ago, I first used Google's presentation system in Google Apps. So I've been using the documents and the spreadsheets here and there for little things, but
sure.
Hadn't tried the presentation system. And what I found was interesting. First of all, there are a couple of things that I'd like to see a little easier. Tables are a little hard to use, but in general, what I found is that it does all the things I need to, and it doesn't tempt me to waste time messing around with things that I really don't need to.
In picking other words, fonts, colors, themes.
What is it when we do that? What we're really doing is we don't know what to say, so we try to make it prettier. It kind of forces the issue of, spend your time on the substance and you can make it look pretty. You can make it look perfectly good. It's not
right.
Like it looks ugly. It looks
right.
Perfectly good, but it just doesn't have all those silly features that you don't really need.
Yeah.
It's great to be able to work on it in the office and in somebody else's computer
and on
my iPad.
The flexibility is unbelievable. So can you work? I can actually work on it on the iPad yet?
You can view it.
I have an Android phone. They talk about editing documents on the Android phone. I don't think it's here yet. If somebody has access to it or knows about it, send us a note at the show because I'm dying for it. I found that on the Google Apps, I'm a huge fan of Google Apps, that their presentation app has been the one that sort of lagged behind a little bit, but it seems that more recently they've been adding to it.
Google is funny about these things. They add features and they don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
It's like you go in one day and suddenly...
So it's sort of
there
fun.
It is. It's sort of fun. I'd actually like to know sometimes.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
But yeah, they are very much in the mode of steady progress rather than big releases. So.
Great. Well, I also have it's a pseudo cloud tip, and it's also in the presentation arena. Folks who've listened to the show for a while know I'm a bit of a presentation freak, and I like trying out all the new services. Mine is old school meets new school. I'm using Mac Office 2011. Which has a new feature in PowerPoint called Broadcast. So here's the way PowerPoint Broadcast works with the Mac 2011 app. You're in PowerPoint, you decide you want to broadcast, you press Broadcast, it gives you a URL, you send that URL to somebody, and you can then drive the presentation with them getting a full screen view on the other side. And the basic benefit is there's no setup, there's no configuration, there's no nothing, there's no downloads, there's no cookies, Java apps, whatever. And then I can drive and navigate through. And it's really simple and really clean. They should have put a URL shortener in there. They didn't, but maybe somebody will add that in, or maybe I can find a way to build that in myself. But my recommendation is PowerPoint Broadcast. If you have a new version of Office and you haven't tried it, give it a shot. That's a wrap up for this show. Dave, thanks for coming on to join us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Gar.
Where can people find more info about you, Standing Cloud, web addresses, Twitter addresses, wherever you want to point folks?
Standingcloud.com is the website URL. Standing _ cloud is our Twitter feed. And those would be the two places to start. And if you're wandering around the Pearl Street Mall in Boulder, come see us.
Great. And for me, Gary Orenstein on Twitter, full name Gary Orenstein. We also have the Cloud Computing Show now on Twitter with the Twitter handle Cloud Show. And thanks again to all of our listeners. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com. Email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. And please be sure to subscribe on iTunes. You can search for The Cloud Computing Show in the podcast directory or click the link on the top right of our homepage, and that'll take you to the show directly. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you on the next show. Bye-bye.